So it's a very nice space for meditation. I feel lots of gladness and gratitude for the community here, that there is such a space and time in this area. Lots of appreciation for everyone who's made that possible. It was nice to sit together with you all on this Monday evening. So I'm not so familiar with the mic because I've been a bit of a recluse in the last few years. And although I've been asked to come out and speak on a number of occasions, a number of places in those years, this is the very first invitation, such invitation that I've accepted. I have a special reason for that. You heard a very brief bio. Thanks for that. And if any of you look at the website, you may have noticed that there was nothing following my name in the days before this gathering. And I think when I was asked to give a bio, I was quite happy with the computer failure that made it so I couldn't email back immediately. And I was led to consider how wonderful it was to think of just an empty page, like the computer screen, just clear and bright and empty. And felt a deep sense of peace and relief in that. I've been happy to be relatively anonymous in the last few years, and I think abide in present awareness. In a bright awareness of just being here now, with color, in the colors that are seen by the eyes, and sound is heard by the ears. The feelings in the body. And whatever arises in the mind. Without making anything more of it than that. It's been a great relief. And a very peaceful way to live. I've been happy in Northern Asia and Southern Asia, and here in America as well, to be able to come and go quite freely as a monastic, leaving very little trace. I suppose if I wished for anything to be remembered, I think I would wish for just that empty space, that openness and awareness, just an empty path without any mark, without any trace. I would like to invite you to imagine for a moment just being here now, this body made of elements, whether we say or think of them as earth and water and air and fire, or as solid and liquid and gas and warmth. And the feelings of the body, just that, just feelings. Unbound to anything. Just arising and passing away in present awareness. And the same for whatever arises in the mind, freely arising and passing, not bound to anything. In this space of calm and bright awareness. I would like to invite you to imagine on this Labor Day, which is meant to be a day of rest from labor, to return to the point of mind where all your work is done, where everything that needed to be done is completed. And well finished. I would like you to imagine how it feels in your mind and body for everything to be completely settled. And then to bring that into the next breath, in and out. Long ago, when I was ordained as a novice, I was in India, and there was a monk who told a story to us, as he had heard it, as it had been passed down, a story that I have read nowhere in the Nikayas, in the medium length or longer or connected discourses. But it seems very correct. We were just newly ordained as novices, and the monk told this story. He said, at that time, the Blessed One instructed the new bhikkhus, imagine yourself as if dead. Their hearts trembled. What is the Blessed One saying? He said, dead to what? Realize that now, as you've entered upon this path, all of your worldly duties and obligations, all of your worldly concerns, may be laid to rest in peace. Now you may walk free upon the world, lightly upon the earth, leaving no trace behind you. Like a ghost, there will be only a very few who have the eye to see you, and they will indeed be very special people. Don't expect anything from others. Be happy with whatever they give or don't give. Live in harmony with the ways of the world, walking its paths, but don't be attached to them. This is the middle way. So I appreciated very much that timely advice, and have found it to be quite true. Perhaps you too, as you go about your daily lives, walking the paths of the world, may also look with awareness. And some may see you, but many may not. But you may be happy with that. As this path is one of, in fact, embracing truth, the truth of the way things actually are. Seeing it clearly, knowing it perfectly, with an open heart, a balanced mind, in harmony with that, not attaching to or rejecting it. But living skillfully, deepening your insight, developing wisdom, learning when, as I remember from an old Kenny Rogers song in my youth, called The Gambler. You have to know when to hold your cards and when to fold them. Know when to walk away and when to run. Or when to sit. It goes on, never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough to count it when the dealing's done. I found a lot of profound dharma and inspiration in this monastic life, and look back at the good dharma that was in the culture of my youth here in the United States. There's a lot of good teaching in everything. If we have the eye for it, wherever we look. I very much liked Ajahn Chah's admonition to look to the trees. An old name for a monastery is like a garden, an arama, I think here in this place of practice, all of you would be the like the gathered trees of this forest. So for truth, we may look to the trees, look to whatever is around us. I visited his monastery after reading that and found that on the trees there were hung signs, which I thought was very charming, and I asked one of the venerables who was there about that. I had heard that Ajahn Chah said, look to the trees. Here in your forest monastery, upon the trees there are signs. He said, yes, indeed. That's for the people who can't see it just as it is. If you can't just see the natural truth that is as it is, then a well-placed sign may be useful. So I also laughed and just chuckled together underneath the branches. I thought, oh yes, all of the teaching is like that. So I truly have nothing more than that. Starting empty with nothing, I return to empty with nothing. Gladly, happily. I would like to give you a chance for any questions that you may have. I deeply respect the Buddha's own respect for inquiry. And sometimes find the questions even more illuminating than the Dhamma speaker. So with that, I would invite and welcome your questions. Oh, and I would like to introduce the Venerable Lady, the Venerable Bhikkhuni sitting to my right, who is in fact, I think, a far better and more classical Dhamma speaker than myself. This is Ayasuchinta Bhikkhuni. She is originally from, well, I can't say originally, but originally also from nowhere. No one from nowhere, doing nothing. She was born in Germany and began her monastic life with the eight precepts under Ajahn Sumedho, who some of you may know, at Amaravati in England, about 14 years ago, or 15. And became a 10 preceptor, a seminary, a novice, under Bhante Ji, who some of you may also know, Bhante Gunaratna of the Bhavana Society, a forest monastery in the Appalachian Mountains in West Virginia. A very nice place. She had her full ordination at Bodh Gaya in India. A very special and rare and historical event that monastics and monastics to be from all over the world gathered for around the Buddha's ancient seat. I think that was about 7 years back. I'm very fortunate and feel very lucky these days to be spending time together with her for a 3-month retreat period, the very first to be held at the new Dhammadharini Vihara over in the East Bay. And I hope in the future that you would invite her to speak. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear her Dhamma talk here. And I think I would welcome questions to either myself or Venerable Suchinda. If you have any.
At Fremont, do you have this temple which we pass some time? What kind of activities take place there on a regular basis?
Have you been to a temple in Fremont?
I have passed from outside. I never come inside yet.
I see.
We live very nearby.
I'm not sure which temple you may have passed in Fremont, because there are several.
No, the one which I read here on Alvarado Niles.
I see. The temple on Alvarado Niles is a Thai Buddhist temple, Wat Phuthanasorn. And I first went to that temple about 10 years ago, and have been there and around there off and on since then. Dhammadharini Vihara is not that temple. If you were listening to the bio and you heard the name Ajahn Mahaprasert, he is in fact the abbot of that temple. And he and a number of other people in the community there have been very instrumental in the founding of a separate place for female monastic practice. Dhammadharini is specifically a women's monastic retreat residence. So, although I've been around that temple for quite some time and could tell you about the activities there, that's not the place that we're both coming from this evening. We're coming from a little farther down, about 1.4 miles farther down through historic Niles, towards the end of Niles Boulevard. Just before it comes into Old Canyon and goes out the Niles Canyon. And our main activity there is the practice. It is specifically a place for women in monastic life and those who would like to have monastic retreat to be able to reside in practice. So this is something that we haven't really had in this area until now. If you've seen any other female monastics here, in brown robes or in white robes or whatever color they might be, they may have been here for a short time. They might have been staying for a few days at a temple, or for a few days with friends, or they might have been up to, I think these days at Abhayagiri, women may take up to 2 weeks of monastic retreat there. And there are other places that have a similar 10-day or 2-week allowance. So that's very nice for the wandering mendicant life. Means to go every few days from place to place. And actually, I think if mendicancy were more dignified, more noble in this area, and I very much support a dignification of noble mendicancy, the introduction of noble mendicancy, then I think it would be very nice for us to walk from place to place, perhaps to go for alms on our way, and to stay here for a night or there for a night. Perhaps even in the parks, but it's currently not legal here to just camp wherever you like, whenever you like. It would be very nice if it were, I think. These days in Niles, now for the past 2 weeks, we have in fact been walking for alms. Every morning we have come out with our alms bowls slung over our shoulders, what one of our neighbors affectionately calls carrying our pot, which sounds very similar to the Thai pot for the alms bowl. And we have been walking through our Niles community every day. Only a few days have we returned, still with this meditation on pristine emptiness and the reflection within our bowls. It has been going wonderfully, amazingly well. On our first day of walking for Pindapat, for alms, one of the ladies, a lady passed us on the street, and she was walking kind of gruffly. And then she looked up at us and she said, "It's very nice to see the ladies doing this." And she went, and then just kept on walking. And about 10 paces farther down, she looked back and just looked at us. And that was on our first day. And I felt truly wonderful. And only later did I learn that we had come out in a newspaper article that very morning, which the majority of Niles had read, which explained something of what we were doing and who we are. And they had known about the Thai Buddhist temple there for some time, but they had never seen the monks walking around town like this before. And so a few days later, someone else said to us, "You know, the monks have been down there for a long time, but we never really see them out like this. It's nice to see you out here." So I really appreciated that. The community has been very, very warm and welcoming. And I must admit to you that although we are not supposed to be attached to form in any way and really practice non-discrimination, I had a very particular and special feeling the first morning that we ate avocados that had been offered and lemon that had been offered from our neighbor's trees. The warmth of the sunshine was still in them, and it was a very special feeling just to be supported by the goodness and kindness of our local neighbors. I have to say, discriminations aside, it was a very good feeling, a very pleasant feeling, one of that really brought home the teaching on interdependency, on mutual support, on freely giving and sharing in trust. I've been very glad, as our neighbors have given things and shared with us also, that in doing so, they feel that like in a countryside town, that breaks the ice. And then they're free to ask all their questions. And very good questions they are. Very excellent questions. They have not had a real contemplative community in their area, although there are 10 churches, 4 Buddhist temples, and 1 mosque. Most of them are more dedicated to community service and less so to meditation or contemplation. So the community does not have much of an understanding yet of what the service, of what the benefit, of what the value of contemplation is. and how that may be a very great benefit to oneself and in one's community and society. That is in fact what informs everything else. So just today a neighbor stopped by Juliana and she asked exactly what I hoped they would ask. She said, "There are a bunch of friends who have questions. They'd like to know more. How about arranging a place and time for getting together?" I've been thinking about, with great gratitude and appreciation for the avocados, the lemons, the apples, the bread, the lemonade, the cookies, the tomatoes, what we may share with this community. When we started, I didn't expect to receive anything. In my mind, I felt it's enough. It's good enough to take a walk, to practice loving kindness with each step, to spread that like flower girls throw down flowers on the path, to spread that as we walk, and to use it for our own developing insight, to see truly. Slowly, from ground level, not in the car, really what is happening in our community, how the people are living, what is their life, what are the issues, where is the suffering, where is the happiness. Amongst this very full medicine basket that we have inherited from the Blessed One, what in this basket is there for their needs? What is the perfect matching balm for wherever there may be a sore? So I welcomed walking just for that, for that contemplation, not even with the idea to receive something. And so I was so very glad when we came back from our walk and Juliana was there with her flowers and her veggies and her bright smile and asking, requesting, I think exactly what we had welcomed. She was concerned that we might be very reclusive and might not want to come out and talk, or that we might rather be left alone in privacy. That perhaps our place was more, maybe more closed, or that we were living a more cloistered life. And I think there is that, certainly there is that aspect. But as I see in the monastic discipline, our life is monastics. One time there was a monk, who collected a little extra rice one day and he set it out on a rock to dry so that he could just add some water the next day and eat that and not have to move from his meditation to enter the sights and sounds and disturbances of the village. So his fellows in the monastic life didn't see him walking for alms for a few days and sought him out and asked, "Where are you, venerable brother? What happened? Are you ill? Are you all right? Are you abiding peacefully?" He said, "Yes, I've been abiding peacefully in deep samadhi. How have you been living? I saved this rice and dried it, and with just a little water then I can support myself without walking for alms each day and stay abiding quietly and happily in bliss." And his fellow monastic said, "Huh, now there's an idea." And went back and were talking about it, and news came back to the Buddha about it. And the Buddha went and visited him here's the great mystery in this story, the one that I've contemplated for some time. The Buddha asked him not to. He asked him to go to walk each day, to rise and to walk into the city, to walk into the town, amidst all its sights and sounds and noises and debauchery and everything. And that he may see the proof of this bliss, of this contemplation, the true depth of his practice in rising and taking that walk. And for others, they may also see that proof. And then enjoined him not to stay in the city for too long, but to return then each day to the forest, to his monastic retreat. So it seems in this simple story, just one point in the enormous monastic discipline, one point of 311, that I find a clue there to the middle way, as we may practice it in monastic life, to be recluses, to be contemplatives, to have our space that is quiet and peaceful and separated from the society, but also that we're enjoined to go out on a daily basis, not with a horn or with banners or knocking on doors or anything like that, but at least to show ourselves for our own practice and to provide a sight of that to the society. Hopefully a vision of peace and calm and contemplation. So that's one of our daily activities. There's also meditation, chanting, a bit of time at night to sleep or rest or meditate more, an open door for the friends who stop by.
Can you describe in retreat, like what that provides for you? Maybe a little bit about your mindset and emotions and thought process in that space.
I have to say that for myself, I've been in it a bit too long now, because I haven't come in and out of this retreat for quite some time. The first time that I left for retreat, I think I was just 19 or 20 years old. And I found something very, very excellent in it for myself to be practicing more, really to be deepening the practice as my mind became clear and steady, as I listened to Dhamma and then reflected upon it and developed insight in the company of fellow practitioners, even in silence together, I found a great joy and a great relief. I felt that I had finally found my way, like a return home. And when I came out of that, I had the strong sense of, there are these classic leaving retreat or coming out of retreat talks about how you bring the practice then, you bring your insights and you bring that practice into your daily life. And so I listened to that talk and I considered it. And that seemed to be the thing to do because there weren't a lot of Western monastics around at that time. It's going on almost 20 years ago. Especially not in my neck of the woods. But there was the message in my heart. which said, this is real and true. This is very important. This, in fact, seems more important than anything else. There is this way that I hadn't realized was open and available. And so for myself at that time, it seemed to me, shall I follow what is the expectation, even my own expectation of myself, not to mention society and family and friends, or shall I be true to my heart in this, although it's an unknown? It seemed almost like stepping into emptiness, truly unknown. And I think I heard from someone earlier on today that for her, the unknown is her greatest fear. And I think for most people, isn't that the case? What else is there to fear, in fact, other than wrongdoing or doing things that we know will harm ourselves or others? Certainly, that would be reasonable to fear, I think. But for most people, it's the unknown. And so there was this moment of, And then I chose to go ahead and step into the unknown, thinking that perhaps it was like stepping off a cliff and that there would be sharp rocks and hungry tigers waiting below as I fell into nothingness, or just into the unknown. But I found, in fact, that there was this immense spaciousness and no sharp rocks, no hungry tigers, and that really entering into the darkness of the unknown with awareness, what started to happen as the meditation deepened is that everything started to get brighter. And that spaciousness and that openness and that ability to just really enter into the unknown and have it not even be unknown anymore. Because when you're there abiding in clarity, just seeing and knowing what's there, it's hardly even correct to call it unknown anymore. Although it may be hard to define it. I mean, to bind it with words or something. So I think it would be better to ask that question from someone who has more recently been on retreat. From someone who has who has more recently entered into it. Would you like to hear from someone like that? Or do you know already? How many of you here have been on retreat before? Quite a lot of you. How many of you found benefit in it? Oh, seems like almost the same number. Wow, that's very nice. Actually, I thought I saw... No, is that right? I thought I saw one or two more hands. So I think one of the things that I really love about this way and this life is that what I hear back from people who do the practice, I'm fond of asking, is it good for you? How's it going? Is it working well for you? And I really love to hear the response that comes back from that. It seems to work very, very well. I don't think I ever remembered hearing anyone say after retreat, oh, how horrible it was to have that insight. Or, They're just kinds of comments like that that I don't really remember hearing, but I've heard a lot about the benefits, even the torturous parts, where the patience and then the release come. Even those parts, I've never heard of anybody really complaining of having developed too much patience or too much understanding, too much wisdom, just too much. Can't stand it anymore. So I've heard so many good things back from others, and I think I still do go on a deeper retreat sometimes. I remember meeting Jill on a special 10-day practice retreat, and found it very nice just to really, really deepen my daily practice, to take it to a whole nother level, in fact, and another, and then to bring that back out again into daily practice life. It's very good to have the time and the space to do that. I have deeply appreciated being able to, and I have felt great compassion for other people who have expressed the wish to, or to continue to deepen their practice after the 10-day retreat ends. They've seen their male friends or counterparts take a trip to Burma or to Thailand or enter Abhayagiri or in some other place, enter monastic life and really spend a shorter or longer time in deepening their retreat practice. And I think that's what the monastic life is meant to be for, is a facility for exactly that, for however long it's good and beneficial. So I've felt compassion for other friends, women who have wished to do the same thing, and thought, oh, it would be nice for there to be such a space, such a place for that opportunity to be open. And selfishly, of course.